Blog Talk Radio.
Nobody moves, please. Don't move.
You are muted.
There's too many things to be changing. Okay, Michelle, I'm getting around the round circle, so y'all let me know if it goes live because I can't see it. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Hashtag My Investing Story. Hi, my name is Ann McNeil, and I am the master builder helping to build stronger and better lives. And I'm very excited to be hosting another episode of My Investing Story with Ione McNeil. As always, we bring the very best from Better Investing to you as we share our investing stories. And today is no different. Today we have Ms. Barnes from Alchemy Investment Club sharing her investing story from the Alchemy Investment Club. So before we talk about Ms. Barnes, let's talk about Better Investing. Better Investing is a 501c3 not-for-profit organization who has helped over 5 million individual investors since its incorporation as a not-for-profit organization, and today is no different. So we're here sharing another story, and Ione is going to introduce our guest, and we're going to go ahead and get the program started. So welcome, and Ione, to you.
Thank you. Hi, Ms. Isla Barnes. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? So nice to see you this evening.
Yes. You just had one of your friends join us, Tamika Beeks.
Glad to be here.
Shout out to Tamika Beeks. So let's start with you being from New York. Are you originally from New York?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Representing the borough of Brooklyn, right?
Well, I was actually raised in Manhattan, in Upper Manhattan and Harlem. And I moved to Brooklyn as a young adult, and I've been here, raised my kids here, so it's home now.
So talk to us a little bit about originally being from Harlem and your experience growing up within your family. You know, did they talk about money? I'm sure, you know, you learned a lot just because of the cultural scene and historical place and time you grew up. But really interested, especially in your experience in New York, we'll get to, you know, the Better Investing chapter and the fact that there is none anymore in New York. But, you know, New York is a really interesting place just because it's where our stock market or New York stock exchange is housed. So could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, actually, I think like most kids when I was growing up, I didn't pay that much attention to anything pretty much outside of my neighborhood or my block, actually. My mom was a single mother. And she worked really hard, and she was a great money manager. She managed to, on a very small salary, she managed to send me to private schools. I'm an only child also, so that, you know, there weren't any other siblings around that she had to worry about. But we didn't talk money a lot. I mean, I knew that she was constantly looking at the checkbook and worrying about getting the checks out on time and that sort of thing. But I was never aware that she had any trouble paying the bill. Never aware of that. She never, if it happened, she was clear in not to involve me in that. And there was almost nothing that I wanted to do as a little kid, as, you know, school age kid or as a teenager that she wasn't able to help me to do. I did start working when I was 14 years old. I had like a part-time summer job, and I did summer jobs for, you know, quite a few summers before, you know, before I became an adult.
So, I mean, you know, that's generally our history of even if we being our parents don't have much money, the money that we do have, we tend to invest it in our children's education and to provide them the opportunities, better opportunities than, you know, those that came before us. So with that being your childhood experience, when did you learn about investing?
I would say somewhere around, I would say the late 90s, because when I was growing up, you basically had a job, paid your bills, and you had a savings account. Now, I'll say this, the school that I went to, the elementary school that I went to, took all of us regularly to the bank that was down the block from the school. And our parents would give us like $5, and we would all trot down to the bank, and we had little bank books, and we would make deposits into our bank account. Please don't ask me what happened to that bank account. I have no memory of that. But they did take us to the bank and try to instill in us that we were supposed to be saving some money. Whatever we had, we were supposed to be saving some money. I realized later when I had my kids, this thought came back to me, and I said, oh, I'm going to take them to the bank and open an account for them and get them to start saving. But by that time, banks had said, we're not doing that anymore, because children, their explanation of it was that at that time anyway, the way that they recognized you was by your signature. And if you, and children's signatures change so frequently as they grow, that they couldn't verify from 1 2-year period to the next 2-year period that that was the same person. Once you become an adult, generally your signature kind of stays, but, you know, as you're growing up, it changes. So since they were, they basically at that point, the only way they knew it was you was by your signature, they had pretty much stopped doing the children's bank accounts thing. So that was kind of a blow to me, but, you know, I tried to have a savings account, you know, pretty much at all times. So in case something strange happened, like I wasn't working, or got fired, whatever, I would have, you know, some way to take care of the kids. But investing itself was something that didn't really occur to me until the late 90s, I would say. And that was when the stock market was going great guns, and it was hard not to know that the stock market was doing so well. And there
very much like right now.
Very much like right now. I mean, you have to be not paying attention at all to know that, you know, it's going so well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've been trying for the last 3 days to remember how exactly I heard about better investing, because now you put some, you put a search term into a browser and you can get back a million different results. That wasn't happening in the late 90s. So I don't really remember, but I do remember that I found out that there was a meeting in New York in one of the colleges at FIT. And that they had regular meetings every month, and I decided, it took me a few months to get up the gumption, but I then decided to go and check it out, see what it was.
Wow. And so that was in the late 90s when you went to visit that that first meeting. And that first meeting was a Better Investing New York chapter meeting. It was an educational event. Was it a... It probably wasn't a model club at the time.
No, it was a regular monthly, like, chapter meeting.
Okay, like the board meetings we have now, just about this is how we serve better investing members in our area. Oh, wow. So from that meeting, what made you stay?
I didn't want to walk away and say, gee, I don't really understand any of this, so I'm just going to drop it, because I don't know why I thought I could participate in this, because at that point, people like me did not participate in Wall Street activities. But there was also, at that time, things were starting, you know, the internet really wasn't what it is now, but it was certainly starting. And there was a company that was allowing people to invest on the internet at that time, and it was called ShareBuilder. Yeah, Share Builder. So between Share Builder and BI, that was my introduction and my foray into starting to invest.
So for people that don't know and are less than 20 years old.
Hopefully nobody less than 30, but still move on.
Share Builder was the Robin Hood of the 90s.
Yes, it was. It was a disruptor.
It was a disruptor. It allowed you to buy at least one share of stock online. And this is before the dot-com bubble.
Right.
And I can't remember if my stock fund ended up buying them, but or was a rebrand of that. But, yeah, Share Builder was the forerunner to, as somebody mentioned to me, ex-Jackie Powski today, we had a meeting, and she said, you know, Robinhood democratized investing, I think in the 2000s, right? But Share Builder at that time ended up democratizing investing. And I believe that Better Investing, or at the time NAIC, National Association of Investors Corporation, ended up transitioning or at least working with Share Builder because NAIC/BI had already had a low-cost stock investment plan.
Right.
Wow. Okay. So do you remember some of your, you know, early first purchases, one share here, one share there?
GE. Verizon. Trying to think, what else did I buy? Oh, a couple of other things, too. I have a record here somewhere, but yeah, GE, I remember GE. This was when everybody thought GE was just the best company ever.
In the world.
Yeah, Jack Walsh was still there, and it was just the best company, you know. Nothing could go wrong with them. And Verizon, because at that time, the communications industry was beginning to really perk up, as it were. And
this is before cell phones you could put in your pocket.
Oh, yes, much before cell phones. But there was a lot of, they were laying a lot of copper wire at that time.
Yes.
People,
yes,
some, a lot of people had had to have, because I had to have it, had to have multiple telephone lines. If you had a computer and you wanted to connect to what was at that time the Internet, I couldn't do it on my regular phone that I talked on. Because whenever a call would come through, I would get bumped off.
Right.
So I had to have a second line put in. So just so that I could use the computer online. So there were a lot of people who were doing that because they were doing, I know nobody will understand this, they were doing bulletin boards at that time. So in order to access the bulletin boards and to be able to talk to people and keep that communication going, if you were using your landline, your voice line, anytime a call came through, you were knocked off. So to avoid that, lots of people were getting second line. So it was a big thing for Verizon at that time.
You know, I'm laughing. I'm trying to keep my laughter inside because you just took me back to where that sound.
Yeah.
Waiting to connect.
A new sound we all knew, yeah.
Dial up, waiting to connect. And then there was a commercial where the person is waiting to connect. They go make a cake. They go wash their hair.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And the worst thing was to finally make the connection, and then somebody calls you, and you lose the connection. So.
Yeah, I want to go back to people like me. You made the comment when you said people like me didn't invest during that time. I just want to make sure our audience understand who are you referring to when you say people like me? Because people will be listening to this in the future on the podcast. And
yeah, they don't get it. So I'm referring to people of color. I'm referring to poor people. I'm referring to women. Because women, if women were in relationships with men, the men were usually the ones who took care of the money. Usually. Not always, but usually. If women were single parents, as my mom was, you simply paid the bills, you had your savings account, and the whole idea of investing was something that happened to other people in other parts of the city that you never visited. So you heard about Wall Street every night because you listened to the nightly news, and towards the end of the nightly news, before the sports, they would give you a little business information. So you knew stuff was going on, but you knew it wasn't for you. So when this whole thing started happening in the late 90s and early 2000s where Wall Street actually started listening to Main Street and started that connection between Wall Street and Main Street because so many people through ShareBuilder and others were actually buying stock without using the, you know, the investment bankers.
The big brokers, exactly.
Yeah.
Because at that time, and you can speak to this, you needed to have $10,000 just to have a conversation with the broker.
Yes, you couldn't. Yeah, no. You weren't going in there with, what is Stash? I see Stash advertisements all over the place. It starts with $5. No, you weren't going to Goldman Sachs with $5.
It wasn't worth
it. It wasn't happening. It wasn't happening. You had to have a lot of money to even get an appointment with them.
Yes.
And that's a large part of why we are doing this show, to let people know. A lot of people don't realize how things have changed. So everybody has an investment story. We thank you for that because, again, you're bringing up some very important points. But we want to make sure that our listeners understand you can invest right now, right where you are, in whatever it is you know, life and self.
That's right. It's possible for everybody. It wasn't until the late 90s with ShareBuilder and other companies that it became, as you said, democratized, where anybody could open an account. And I think you could even, at that time, you didn't have to necessarily have your account connected to a bank. You could send them a check.
Exactly.
You could send them a check or a money order.
Yeah, of course. Right.
And that was fine. Yeah, you know, so now you pretty much have to have a bank account. But, you know, so things are very, very different now than they were then, yeah. So a lot more people are definitely able to do that now.
So you went to this first meeting in New York, Better Investing New York chapter. You listened. You stayed put. You took action. And then 2000, right? So we have the dot-com, you know, bubble burst. We had all of the high-raised tech companies, Qualcomm and all those companies, go through the roof and down through the floor. Walk us through what you went through. You know, did you leave BI for a time? Did you stay connected? Did you buckle down on learning? Just kind of take us back through how you processed those events.
Well, one of the things that the New York chapter had at that time was a model club, which met after the general meeting. So I decided to sit in on – they invited people to come in and sit and watch. So I decided to sit in on the model club because at that time also BI's main mission was that not only that people should invest individually, but they should, clubs would help you learn, that clubs would help you invest better, and so forth. So they were pushing clubs. So I sat in on the model club, and there were several other people who had attended the meeting who were also sitting in on the model club. And we did this several months in a row. And after we'd seen each other a few times, we decided, that group of us that was sort of spectators, decided that we would try to form a club of our own, which we did. And we had this club for about, I would say about 3 years. We never actually invested in any of the dot-com bubble thing because we were actually trying to pay attention to the BI methodology at that point. And so we never bought Qualcomm. We never bought Cisco. We never even bought Microsoft, you know. So we were looking at things like Verizon things like that, more established companies, companies that have been there for a while. And we went on for about, as I said, for about 2 or 3 years before we actually broke up. So it was, you know, we did a lot of learning that way.
So you in these 2 or 3 years of you being in this specific club, was that was during the time of the bubble burst?
Yes.
So did you disband in early 2000s?
I'm trying, you know, I can't remember exactly when we disbanded because we actually stopped our meetings for a while before we actually disbanded the club. But yes, we were there when all of that, you know, when the stock prices started falling, when the valuations started falling. And we were actually kind of, we were almost giddy that we hadn't bought any of those companies and that we didn't have to watch it drip down to almost nothing. But you, for those who were there, remember at that time, all companies took a hit at that point. You know, it wasn't just the dot-coms, but all companies took a hit at that time. So we did have to kind of weather the some small falling stock prices of the companies that we did own. But we kind of stuck through it, weathered it. Other members' kind of life, their life experiences kind of interfered, and that led to the club not being able to go forward for much longer after that.
Okay. And so did you maintain your BI membership during this and kind of stay connected before you helped to start your next club, I think, which is Alchemy Investment Club?
Current club is Alchemy, and I stayed with BI for a while, but again, you know, kind of life interfered and the money wasn't there to pay the membership fee, so kind of let it go for a while. I can't really remember when I came back to it. I think I stayed with ShareBuilder for a very long time. And I did that, went on for every month for years and years and years until they actually kind of disbanded. They were bought
exactly.
off
yeah,
by several were, people, and
right,
then they
right.
kind of just drifted away.
Yeah.
But I stayed with them until that. So I wasn't with BI as a member. And I think what was happening, too, in the New York chapter, that once the dot-com bubble burst, the hordes of people that used to pack into the meetings kind of drifted away because, you know, it wasn't – at that point, it wasn't – people weren't as excited about it. You know, it wasn't making as much – it was still making money, and people didn't understand it was still making money. And I understand that now. Didn't understand it then. It wasn't making the kind of money it was making in the late 90s, so everybody wasn't interested in it so much anymore. So, you know, I also let my membership lapse, and as I said, but I stayed with ShareBuilder, so I was kind of, and every once in a while I would go back to ShareBuilder, and I would look at what I had, and I would say, oh, that's not good. Let me find something else, and I'd try to go find something else, and every once in a while I'd change what stocks I had, and then it wasn't until... Truthfully, I didn't start really thinking about it again until, I can't remember what year, but I became aware of a 403B at my job and that this was a way of saving money for retirement. Of course, at that point, I wasn't even thinking about retiring, but I thought, this can't be bad. Especially if they will let you put money aside, but that reduces your taxes, so you don't lose as much on your net. I was like, this is not so bad, you know. So I started with the 403B. And that's when I really started, like, oh, I'm supposed to figure out what I'm supposed to do with this. At that time, it wasn't up to me to do it. It was up to the company that was taking care of it to do it. But then the company that I worked for moved from the 403B. They were a hospital, so they moved from a 403B to a 401K. So now you have to figure it out. There's nobody there who picks where the money goes. You have to figure out where the money goes. Here's your list. Pick something. And so that's when I began to really start to try to pay attention again to what company was doing what fund was doing what companies were in what funds and that sort of stuff. And really doing that is what kind of brought me back around to, well, maybe it doesn't just have to be mutual funds through the 401k. Maybe I can still buy, do this on an individual level. So I came back to and started my membership in BI again.
And I had two questions at one time. Let me get the first one out. Well, second one out, see if I remember the first one. But what year was Alchemy Investment Club started?
That I really don't know. They've been around, I would say, for probably, without being real clear about this, I think they've been around for about 20 years.
Okay, so but you joined.
I joined
later.
Recently.
Oh,
what I heard, though, is that they were started because several of them were also attending those New York chapter meetings. And one of them, and I think it was Dottie, who was unfortunately couldn't be here tonight, sort of put out a notice that she wanted to talk with some other people who might be interested in starting one of the clubs that, at the time, NAIC, that NAIC was pushing. And it seems that some of the people who are still there and some others came together and formed Alchemy. So I think they've been around for about 20 years.
Yeah, Shamika says 20, and I remember your president speaking about the changing times and the changing attitudes about why the Better Investing New York chapter basically ended up folding. But I think it's because people joined, but they were more New York Stock Exchange traders than they were Better Investing members.
Right.
More of the hare or rabbit methodology than the turtle methodology. And so I'm actually very impressed that Alchemy, and I don't know any other group within New York, has still been able to, even without a local chapter support, still stay close to the Better Investing organization and, you know,
yeah, we
continue,
do.
Yeah, 20 years strong.
Yeah, we do. And they, and we are, Alchemy is a very, for lack of a better word, very diverse club. We are racially diverse. We are gender diverse. We are religiously diverse. We are geographically diverse.
Age diverse
and geographically diverse. So we have a member who is in Massachusetts. We have two members that are in Florida, and then there are those of us, there are two of us who are here in Brooklyn and one who is in Long Island. And I know that, it's a new thing for a lot of clubs in the last year, in 2020, to start having meetings online. But Alchemy has been doing that for a very long time because the members are so spread out all, over the country. So they've been doing so. It's an online only club, which was great for me. When I found that, I think it was either in 2017 or 2018, it was because the New York, what still existed at that time, of the New York chapter was having a meeting, like an annual meeting, at the New York Public Library, and I decided to go. And one of the other people that was there was one of the members of Alchemy, and I managed to connect with her. She invited me to come in and observe a couple of their meetings, which I did, and I liked it so much. Well, I really liked the idea that, they were online, so we didn't have to make specific arrangements or we didn't have to pay money for, rents or whatever. We could do it online. And this was a club that had been in existence for a while. They had, solid rules and regulations and stuff, and, they were following the BI methodology, so it was very, very attractive to me.
So I think my earlier question takes you back to when you found out that your place of employment had a 403B, then it changed to a 401K. At that time, were you 30s, 40s?
Probably When did they switch over? Oh, boy. Probably 50s.
Mm.
Probably 50s, yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah, so, but I will say that because of my experience with ShareBuilder and because of my experience with NAIC, now BI, it wasn't as foreign to me to figure out which mutual fund I could put my money in. I know,
or even what to look for.
Yeah, for a lot of people, I know it's a big problem because if you've never ever thought about that, how do I make that choice? How do I even know what any of these names mean? But because I had been sort of on the periphery of investing for a while, although maybe not actively investing, but at least paying attention to some of it for a while, it wasn't so hard for me to go to the library and to start digging around and start finding stuff and using one of my favorites, Morningstar, to find out about mutual funds and eventually about individual stocks. Yeah. So that 401k really was the push.
Wow. And thank you for sharing your age at the time, because we want to continue to encourage all age groups to recognize that now is the best time, despite what age you are, and now is the best time to turn it around, to amp it up, to get more interested, because you have a lot more years ahead of you.
Right.
How did, and I know you are retired now, but how did the ShareBuilder and 403B and 401k participation help you to plan for your retirement? I don't know what age you retired, you don't have to say, but I do know that there's a difference between working for a long time and waiting for somebody to give you your papers of what you will have in retirement while trying to count Social Security in, versus the person that has at least invested a little bit themselves to add to the retirement pot, if they're expecting a pension, if they're expecting Social Security or anything like that. How did that ShareBuilder and retirement contribution help you to kind of put the piece together to realize, you know,
Well, when I started thinking about retirement, it was, and pretty much still is now, I really rely on Social Security, but also because when I started working for the hospital, they also had not only the 403B, they also had a pension plan. So there's a pension coming too. So between those two, I feel that's what covers the basics. And what I had in the 401k is gravy. That is, so I know there are lots and lots of people, like there are some women that I worked with that were absolutely too afraid to get involved with the 401k. And when they were about to retire and they became aware of how much Social Security they would actually have, they were a little disappointed. And they were worried about how they were going to continue to live the life that they were living, not that they were living extravagantly, not by any means, but how were they going to be able to do the things that they were doing if all they had was the Social Security? And at that point, it's you know, kind of late to say, well, you know, maybe, you know, you could have. But again, if it's not anything that you or your family even ever think about or talk about or participate in, there's no way, for most of us, there's no way that at 40s or 50s you're going to leap in to something that you think is not for you, is not meant for you. So I kind of look at the 401k as gravy. And if, you know, if other things fall apart, hopefully that will still be there. And, you know, it's gone up and down. as everything has in 2020, but because the market is doing so well as it is, this is not a bad thing. I find it, you know, I find it joyful that it's there and that I can watch it and that I can do things with it. And every quarter I look at the statements and I try to figure out, do I want to stay with this or do I want to go over here? Or so in addition to the individual stocks and the club stocks, I'm also spending time working with the working with my mutual fund stuff, the 401k stuff. And so it's kind of investing all the time. And you're right. I really wish that I almost wish that the disruption that occurred in the late 90s and the early 2000s with investing being made available to regular people, that I wish I had known about that earlier. I wish that had been something earlier that was available. And I really hope that there are lots of younger people who will take advantage of this opportunity to be able to invest at $5 or $10 a month. And if you're 25 and you retire at whatever, that $5 or $10 that you put in, if you do it regularly every single month for your entire life, will be a very, very nice nest egg for you.
I'm sorry, could you say that again? How much?
$5 or $10 a month. I mean, even if it's just, and you know, as you go along, you may be able to put in more. So if you can start.
I just want to make sure people get the power of compounding and
yeah, I mean, it adds up. It definitely adds up. If you keep it there, if you don't have to take it out, if you continue to do it. And honestly, if it's $5 a month, it's hard to see how you wouldn't be able to continue to do it.
I know for anybody that has Amazon Prime, Hulu, Netflix.
They could do it.
I'm just saying.
I hear you. Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
You know? Meanwhile, the library offers a whole lot of this stuff for free.
Yes,
so,
it does.
So you could substitute and still be able to get your access to these type of materials, music,
absolutely,
films, TV shows. So that's for anybody who immediately said to themselves, I can't afford it. I'm just letting you know. You have some options.
You do.
You really can't afford not to. You really cannot afford not to.
Well, all I can say is I'm not kind in this area, and for anybody who feels that they cannot afford it, you know, just talk to the people like Miss Isla said, the women that she works with that did not participate. You know, we have a whole lot of senior citizens out here shocked when they find out that the Social Security is one-third, if not less, than the amount they brought home every month.
It's shocking.
Yeah,
I want to add what Howard Johnson said in the chat, and when he said, you know, 50s or later is not too late to invest or too late to learn. And so that's a large part also why we do this show called hashtag My Investing Story. It's never too late. And we've had a number of guests on the show, some who did not start investing until they were in their 60s, 70s, or even 80s.
Right. I can see it. I mean, there are some people who may, because of good health and good genes, may live until they're 90. So if you start when you're 60, that's still 30 years of, of compounding that you can take advantage of. So
it's never too
late. Start. You're right. You're absolutely right. Start now.
Talk to us a little bit about your confidence level as an investor, especially now that you're in retirement, now that you have, you know, in a sense a fixed income, but you're still investing. I mean, I think that is, and to applaud you, that's a phenomenal place to be, because there are so many of your peers who are retiring and either, one, don't think you should be investing during your retirement years, two, don't know how to or feel comfortable, and three, just don't have the money to.
Right.
or think they don't have the money.
Think they don't have the money, yeah. But mm-hmm. I think you're right about the, you know, we, in this country, the way we live, we drip away little bits of money every month that we never recoup, you know. So if we pay attention, if we look at budgeting and we really pay attention to how much money we spend on certain things on a monthly basis, I think almost all of us can find at a minimum $5 or $10, maybe $25 a month that you can put into something. And as you said before, too, there are multiple ways that you can do it. CI is a great way to learn how to do this, even if you can't connect with a club, because we know there are individuals out there that don't actually connect with a club, but you can, they can still teach you how to think about companies, how to think about business, how to look at companies, how to decide which ones are good investments, how to watch that investment, how to make it grow. And you're right, especially when you're retired, when people retire often, if they don't have good hobbies at that point, they're looking around for stuff to do. They don't, you know, they're bored, whatever. This is a great thing to get involved with. It's a great thing. It's a great way to take whatever little bit of money you might have every month and watch it grow on an every monthly basis. So I think it's a great thing for people in retirement to do. I think, you know, you can only add to what you have available to maintain your lifestyle, actually. You can only make that better. Because it is shocking when you think that you hear throughout your working life about Social Security and pension. And I know that when my mother retired, she had a great pension. She worked for the New York City Housing Authority. So she had a great pension and she had Social Security and, you know, no worries. It wasn't the salary that she brought home, but it was enough to keep everything going. Now there are lots of people that don't have a pension. So we have to figure out a way for them to be able to stock away some money so that they can, if they happen to own a home, they continue to pay off their home. If they haven't paid it off before they retire, that they can still get cars, that they can still travel, that they can still pay the gas and electricity bills and buy food. Because those are the basic things that we have to do, and we have to let them know that it is still possible to have a little bit more available to you on a monthly basis through investing to be able to keep all that stuff going.
Yeah, and you just got a compliment as one of the expert researchers in your investment club.
Oh, thank you. Well, I have time. So.
Right. And I think your willingness to dig in and, you know, really pull things out and tie them together. I mean, I visited your club once, and I can attest.
I do dig, yes. I do dig. Sometimes too much, but yes, I do dig.
Well,
you mentioned before about the library, and I'm sure there are most large libraries have access to resources that people can use to learn about this.
For free to them. Yeah.
For free
to them.
Exactly.
On your own, Value 9, Morningstar, all that stuff costs.
Yes.
But through your local library, it does not cost you anything.
I remember when we, back in the early 2000s, when we started our club, we cheated to get our Value Line subscription. What we did was, Value Line had at the time, I don't know if they still have it now, but they had at the time that you could join for like 13 weeks for what was a small amount of money.
Y'all get around Robin.
So we just passed it along, and each person got to pay for one of those 13-week subscriptions, and so we had Value Line, which was really? the basic that you needed at that time to really dig in. So now it's even easier because if you have a decent library anywhere near you and you can join that library, for the most part, Value Line is available to all of them.
And just so the public knows, I think Value Line subscription during that time was over $1,000 a year.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
No,
not cheap.
And still not cheap.
No.
One last question. I think it's going to be my last question. But I want you to speak to staying committed while being a mother, during your working life, even while raising your children, you continue to invest. You share builder. Talk to us about that, because, you know, people have you could check all the boxes of why you could not afford it.
Oh, yeah.
So just, yeah. You know, talk to us a little bit about how you did afford it and why was it at that time earlier in your life important to you to stick with it?
Well, one thing was it was important that that I wanted to show my kids that they could look at money differently than maybe the way that I looked at it or the way my mother looked at it. That it wasn't something that you couldn't have, that, yes, it would be great if you had the entrepreneurial spirit, but if you didn't have that, and I don't have that, that you can still make, and have some money available to you that you don't necessarily have to send to Con Ed right now, some extra. It was very important to me that I keep that going, and if I could explain to you how I managed to write that check every month, I really don't know how I did that. But it was just not – I didn't want to give it up. It was one of the things that I decided I did not want to give up, and I wanted to keep going. I found out when I was in the initial club that I was in that I really, really, really liked the process of investing. I really liked – the research and the buying and the following and all that stuff. I really, really liked so not doing it was just not on the table. You know, it was just something I like to do. And I know for a lot of other people, it might be more like a job than a hobby.
Work, exactly.
Yeah, work. Mm-hmm. It's work, and they don't want to do any more work. But, you know, you can't have money without work. You can't.
And you found joy in it.
Yeah.
And how has Alchemy, being a member of Alchemy, really enhanced your investment journey and experience thus far?
Well, one of the glories of being in a club is that you don't get to take a month off. You don't get to take time off. If you're in a club, it's great to be at least attached to some level of news coming in on a daily basis about the world of business and the world of investing. And if you are looking at that, you're going to see the name of some club you own, some stock that you own in that news somewhere. And it's going to spark you to pay more attention. So you don't really have time to, you know, you don't have time, I don't want to do that this month. Well, you may not want to, but you've committed to these other people just as they have committed to you, and we're all committed to the club. So Alchemy has, particularly in 2020, when everything was really so strange, Alchemy has been an anchor and part of a really firm foundation for me to, yeah, everything out here is going crazy, but this is solid, and this is going to keep going, and we can keep this going, and this is good for me. Personally, and good for all of us together and our club.
Wow, I didn't think about participating and committing to a club being anchoring.
It is. Definitely is. I think that I know there are individual investors out there who've done, you know, quite well by themselves, and they're feeling like really good about that, and they don't need a club. Great. But I think lots of people need social interaction. They need other people to encourage them. They need to know that their opinions about stuff matter and are correct and are, you know, welcomed. And that's what clubs do for you. And that's what DI does for you. They let you know that you're not there by yourself. You may be an individual investor without a club, but you are not alone. There are lots and lots of other people who are doing the same thing that you are doing, and hopefully coming out better for it.
Wow. And so what would be your word of encouragement or call to action for Black single mothers who are just now getting interested in investing because of all the craze from 2020 and just now opening up an account for the first time in the last couple months? What would you encourage them to do? You know, because I'm still thinking about how you committed to this while still raising your children. You know, I don't know if you let them see the statement or just, you know, what did you do and how would you share some words of wisdom for others like you, but younger?
Well, first I would say be patient. Be patient with yourself in terms of what you're learning. Understand that there are things to be learned and that be patient with how much it's not going to blow up. You're not going to be a billionaire overnight. That's not going to happen. But if you're committed to it and you're patient with it, you can see returns that will make you want to go further, want to continue. And you will see stock prices go up, which will make you happy. It will make you happy. It will bring you joy to know that, oh, I paid $10 for that stock. Oh, and look, now it's 20. You know, so as long as that's going on, just be patient with yourself. Give yourself time to learn all of the stuff that you have to learn. And take it easy. It will come, especially if you're much younger. It will come if you just have to stick with it. Think of your investments as one of your kids. You need to raise that child. And you need to pay attention to it fairly regularly to keep it growing well.
Wow. Thank you. A plant that produces results.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Miss Ann?
Well, listen, I am quickly typing her comments in the chat on Facebook and on social media because these are tweetable quotes. Be patient with yourself to learn. Take it easy as you learn. Think of your investments as one of your children. By paying attention, we drip away money as we cannot recap. And these are some wonderful thoughts to ponder. We also want to give a shout out to some of your members that are in the chat, Rochelle Bowman, and of course,
Rochelle.
Yes, and Shamika.
Hi, Shamika.
Yes, thank you, ladies. And I'm sure Ione will be circling back around to all of you to ask you possibly to come on and share your investment story. And Ms. Barnes, I said to you before the program started, this was going to be one of the best shows ever. And you have delivered a very different kind of information and presentation for us. So we want to say thank you because you went there at a lot of different levels, especially as a member of the club, and how your journey of just being persistent is so innovative and encouraging. And thank you, Ione, for pulling out for this whole idea. I wrote it down. You know, you started with the 403B, then you went to 401K, but you still have your pension and your Social Security, and you are living the life a lot of people would aspire to, and just it does not have to be all of the fanfare. So I just wanted to just say that before I make my comments about the commercial. See, that's why I am make sure she gives me like 2 minutes at the end because we can both talk a lot. Anyway. Michelle is going to share with us information. We want to invite all of you, please register for our financial empowerment seminar that we're hosting. And it's coming up on the screen. But while we do that, I also want to encourage everybody, please join us live and in person to come to the Westin Dallas Park Central Better Investing Beach. That's the Better Investing National Convention. It's going to be held
on the 21st of October in Dallas, Texas. And so you can go to betterinvesting.org and you can register. We will make sure we put the link in the chat. But in addition to that, like I said, we are hosting, and Michelle, if you can share screen, we would like everybody to see the flyer for the financial empowerment. Also, if you are not a member, free is good. You can go to the Better Investing website. On their front page at the very bottom is the 90-day free membership. All right, so you have no excuse. And Ms. Barnes already told you, you can invest $5. You can also go to the corporation and invest directly, or you can do it through Better Investing and a lot of other places. Michelle, if you can put the flyer back up, please. I was talking about some other things, but this is our flyer for the financial empowerment. It's going to be held on the 15th of May. You can register now by going through Eventbrite, or you can click the link, which is placing the link right now on Facebook and social media. We're also putting the link in the chat here on Zoom if you're not registered. Also, share this information with a friend. We also want to encourage you to comment, like, and share the show. But free is good. We have a phenomenal program. This is our third year doing this. We're second year doing this on Zoom, which is going to be virtual. But also we will have this same program, but a little bit different, face-to-face at the National Conference for Bank. All right. And if any of you are interested in volunteering with us, you can reach out to us. Ione, which is the best email to reach out?
Everything is always abetterinvesting@gmail.com.
Okay. You can go to just let us know by contacting us at A, the letter A for Anne, of course, abetterinvesting@gmail.com. And with that, Ione, thank you, and Ms. Barnes, phenomenal show. Thank you. And we'll
thank you so very much for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Last words.
Yeah. We got her full story, and I think that it's nice for it to still resonate, because I'm even still thinking about her journey and some words of wisdom, because we're doing a lot. People are coming in. But these times are very similar to the late 90s when she got started.
Yes.
It's a lot of people going to get started, but not everybody is going to stay engaged, stay invested, and stay learning. And so that's actually why we are doing hashtag my investing story and getting people connected to Better Investing, because exactly what you said, Ms. Barnes, really need to be connected and stay connected, mm-hmm. to stay encouraged, to be persistent.
Exactly.
This is not for the faint at heart, but it's not hard. Mm-hmm. It just requires showing up, staying in the game, and in time, learning delayed gratification, because I don't know when the light bulb went off for you, but once you hit that 20-year, at least for me, when I started to hit the 20-year being invested and watching the compound interest, I mean, my mind is starting to be blown.
Wow!
Right? Just like
it can happen. Yeah.
Yeah, but it takes so long to get there.
That's why you have to be patient.
And
you have to start early. But you're absolutely correct. There are lots who can start early, but for those who are older, don't put it off. You can still do it also.
Right. So if there's anybody listening live, please check out betterinvesting.org. We have a ticker talk presentation going on in about 30 minutes. And please also check out the South Florida chapter of Better Investing. You could just type it in. We have a lot of great upcoming events, and we love visitors, and we love questions. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us, to ask us questions. Because that's why we're here. We're volunteers. We're willing and ready to serve. And we all do it because we would like to help. So again, thank you so much for your time, Ms. Barnes. I'm so glad that you finally said yes. We're not going to go into that story, but you're here and you're done.
Very much. Thank you for the push. I needed the push.
Yes, and I'm just so glad because you helped us. You helped bring Shamika on, but you know, hearing your story really, no one could do it better than you. I love your perspective, and I really hope that people also loved it too and feel that they can do something about it because you're not alone. We're all in this together.
Yes.
And we would like to continue to stay together. So, again, become a member of Better Investing if you're not already. Visit us at the South Florida chapter. And we'll see you next week.
And if you left, you can always come back to BI.
As so many of us do.
Yes, so many of us do. That is true.
All right. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Good night. Thank you.
Good night.
All right. Good night. Thanks.
Goodbye.